Mitzvah Reish Lamed Gimel 233. Shelo le'avel hamishpat, not to pervert justice. What does that mean? Shelo, it's a very broad category, seemingly. Shelo yase hadayin avel badin, that a judge should not do a perversion when it comes to determining the ruling. V'ha'avel yeh b'chalei sheyavor amash etziv solanu ha'torah b'inyin hadin. The definition of perversion of justice in this case is very simple. It's anything that goes against the Torah system of justice. The judge is obligated to judge in accordance with the Torah, and that's it. Elim kein asa birtzon balei hadin, unless he goes in accordance with the wishes of the litigants. And they, of course, have the full prerogative to say, you know, this is what the din is, but we're going to give a little leeway. Maybe this guy, Alpi Din, owes me a certain amount of money, but I want to maintain somewhat of a good relationship with him. I understand that it may not be entirely his fault, etc., etc. So therefore, you know, I'm not going to take the full amount that he owes me. I'm going to agree to what's called a pshara. Called in modern Hebrew, it means just a compromise, but has a specific technical meaning in the classical halachic literature of this type of judgment that doesn't necessarily go in accordance with a strict halacha as recorded in Choshen Mishpat. And that is common. It doesn't mean, by the way, that pshara is that you're asking for, you're suing someone for $100. So this, the compromise isn't, so only ask for 50. That's not called the pshara. That's called the Gemara calls, that has very harsh words to say about such things. It's called Dayane Chatzatzta. That Dayanim who just say, well, I don't really know, so just give him half. Mm-hmm. It's not true. A pshara doesn't mean a 50-50 split. A pshara means that you take other factors into consideration besides a strict din. You could have a pshara where the guy's getting, he's suing for $100, and the pshara is that the guy gives him 99. No, or 100 in theory. It could be that he owes an old thing. That could be a pshara. It just means that you take other factors into consideration besides the exact halacha. Or, of course, you don't have to go to Bezdin at all. If you want to be mevater on your part of the money, or you say, I don't want to mess up my relationship with this person at all. I know he owes me $100. I'm not taking him to Bezdin. That's fine as well. But then you don't even get to a... So then you go... Or you only want a much smaller amount. You even at the beginning of the suit say, I'm suing you for $10, even though you owe me $100, so you're not going to say, the Sefer Chinuch is trying to tell you over here, that it's not a perversion of the justice if you say, okay, so for the dayan to say, okay, you pay him $10, even though you really owe him $100. You might think that the justice would dictate that the dayan would have to say, no, he owes you $100, and if you pay him $100, that's it. But that's not a perversion. It's not an avel b'mishpat. That's not what we're talking about. If the balei dinim, the litigants, agree to less than the exact halacha, that's okay. That's what the pasuk is talking about. Because society couldn't function without the correct and just application of the halakha. That's the laws are as follows. The Sefer HaChinuch introduces a new concept here, which is not only is an incorrect ruling of, at least on purpose, a violation of but anything that is in violation of a correct Bezdin procedure that's not to the benefit of the litigants is a violation. So, for example, if you've already reached your ruling and you know where the ruling is going to go, but you say, oh, let's continue arguments, let's talk some more, I don't feel like delivering my ruling now, then that's called ma'ane esadin, that's called incorrectly, unjustly delaying giving the lachar. The judge doesn't know yet, so they continue having the arguments. That's not a question. But if he's just stam delays telling the verdict, that is considered to be a perversion of justice because it causes the litigants anxiety. That the litigants want to know what the answer is already. They want to be done with this burden on their back of this having this court case. So therefore, the dayan is not supposed to unnecessarily delay giving the ruling. It's interesting that some poskim, some rabbanim throughout the centuries have suggested that this may also refer to a regular halachic ruling. That if somebody asks a rabbi a halachic question, and he knows the answer, he's not really trying to research, he knows the answer, and he doesn't answer right away, and he just delays unnecessarily, that they might also be a little bit of a violation But that's also considered to be somewhat of a violation of Lo Sasu Avel Bamishpat, because that's a little bit Ma'anes Hadin, that you cause people to wait unnecessarily to lighten the burden on their backs. So I think the essay in the back of the art scroll, Sefer HaChinuch, he quotes the Maharsham used to instruct the Maharsham of, he lived in the 19th century, a late 19th century. He was a very great posek. He's Jehoz Chubas Maharsham. His name was... Anyway, so he was a very big posek. He was actually known as a very big mekel of the Rabbanim of Europe at the time. So he, it says there that he used to give instructions to his family members that if he was taking a nap and somebody came with a shiloh, they should wake him up immediately. So he shouldn't keep people waiting in the slightest. But they, even he realized that that's not the simple understanding of what this means. This means unnecessarily. So if I'm on my email settings, so in the last week, so when I was out of town, so I had a message responding automatically to emails that I got saying I'm away now, unless your request is an emergency, so I'm not going to answer till I get back from vacation. So that's ma'anes hadin. That's ridiculous. I have to inconvenience myself in order to answer a non-urgent halachic question. It means that unnecessarily you cause someone to wait in order to, you know, that in a manner that causes them real distress unnecessarily. That's not what it means. I mean, obviously, the rabbi has to try to answer the question as soon as possible, but...
sleep at night.
Right, exactly. So the Mishnah, as we know in Pirkei Avos, says that one should be deliberate in judgment. You shouldn't rush to judgment. So the reason being, so you have to make sure to produce a correct halachic ruling. That it's proper for the dayan, when he's judging the case, to discuss all angles of the case with somebody who's greater than he is. So if there's this little judge who's been selected to try a case, himself, he has to realize that there's somebody greater than him, and he should go discuss the case with that person. It's okay for the judge to go discuss the case with others, but it wouldn't be acceptable, for example, for the litigants to go to this supposedly greater judge and, you know, or one litigant to go and present his side saying, by the way, you give the advice to this guy, you should know that I'm really right because of X, Y, and Z. He's not allowed to listen in such a case. Dayan is never allowed to listen to only one side of the story. That's why when you have a court case, for example, so you have sometimes, you know, if there's a local rabbi maybe who's also a judge, so then if one of the congregants comes to the rabbi and says, "Oi, I have this fight with so-and-so, and he owes me so much money, and I'm going to take him to court, and here are my reasoning, here's my reasoning, and I'd like you to be the judge for this case." So the rabbi has to say, "Sorry, I can't be the judge now. You should have just said, I have the court case against this person. I'm summoning him and told me the arguments in his presence so he could respond to them. Now I'm already biased. My mindset coming into the case is already your side, so I cannot be a judge in this case."
Does he have to take it as far as saying, "Well, I know you already because you're a congregant, I can't do it"?
That's also true. That's part of it, of course. If someone is a congregant of the rabbi, and then...
Of course, if two congregants in the same congregation have an issue with each other, and they both...
Best not to go to the rabbi of the congregation. One of them is going to... Okay. Whoever loses is going to might quit the shul. It's no good.
Yeah.
That'll be a bad...
Even the guy who writes the decision. In the New York Times
what you
Sunday knows better than that.
What you can do... is you can have a system called Zabla, which means Zabla is an acronym for Zeborer Lo Echad, which means that the one litigant chooses his own judge, and the other litigant chooses his own judge. Those two judges pick a third judge, and basically, you know, that then there's not a problem because it's normally assumed that each judge is going to argue the side of his litigant. And then it's the third one that the two judges agreed upon who's going to decide the case. So therefore, even though you know they're biased in favor of the person, so that's okay, because they both agreed on the third. There was one time, but there's no obligation. It could be that in the course of the arguments that the judge for one of the litigants is going to change his mind. He's going to vote against his litigant. There's no obligation, obviously, on the part of the judge to vote for his litigant's side. There's a famous story that someone did a Zabla, and he picked Reb Moshe Feinstein as his judge.
The ultimate one.
What? No. He picked Reb Moshe Feinstein as his judge, and then the other litigant picked another judge, and then they picked, and then those two picked the third. So he sat on the case, and then it came out from the ruling of the case that there was a unanimous ruling among all the judges in favor of the other guy. So the person came through a motion. He says, this is a toast. I picked you because I expect you to, you know, I want a new trial. I expected you to judge in my favor. I picked you as my judge for that reason. Moses said, what can I do? I listened to the case and I decided you were wrong. So that's how it works. There's no retrial in such a case. And he's not in any other obligation to vote that way.
2-1.
What?
In any case, it still would have been 2-1.
Yeah, but there are certain times, but it goes on the record that there are...
Right.
Wait. Or it could be that if Ramosha really succeeded in, you know, trying to argue his litigant's case, then one of the other judges might have agreed, or the other judge might have agreed with him, but he saw that he wasn't right.
Well, isn't it possible to bring in an advocate of some sort, or is that,
That's a horrendous thing of the modern Beis Din system, where you have, based on the secular legal system, where people are represented by a council, so they have this institution in contemporary Beis Din culture called a Toen Rabbani, a rabbinic advocate. Mm-hmm. Basically, people who are specially trained in Chosha Mishpat to, basically like lawyers, that they try to interpret the law in a way that's favorable to their client, and they argue the case in front of the Beis Din. So, it's become accepted in contemporary Batei Din to allow a Toein Rabbani. So the Beis Din of America does not allow. They allow lawyers, because that's, I think, they allow people who are trained in secular law, they allow councils, to be present in the proceedings, because I think then it's easier to overturn the verdict of the Beis Din in a civil court. That normally a Beis Din is binding arbitration, that it's the verdict of the Beis Din is enforceable in a civil court, but the civil court finds that there was a very serious procedural flaw in their eyes. Mm-hmm. As if they, you know, obviously in our eyes they don't have the right to do that, but in secular, they do have the right to do that, so if they find a serious procedural violation, then they can overturn the verdict of the Beis Din, even though it was binding arbitration. So apparently it's easier to have it overturned if they did not allow people to be represented by lawyers in the Beis Din proceedings. But they do not allow Toein Rabbani. They do not allow. So that's, but in most Batei Din, they do allow. It's a major problem. They asked, apparently in Rav Belsky's Beis Din, they did allow Toein Rabbani. So Rav Schechter asked him, how do you allow this? It's such a terrible thing that we allow Toen Rabbani now in the Beis Din. Why do you allow this in your Beis Din? So Rabelsky answered, he says, if I don't allow it, no one's going to come to me. And I'm one of the most honest Batei Din around. A lot of the other ones are unfortunately corrupt, so I'd rather they come to my Beis Din, even if they have bring a Toen Rabbani. But really,
and the problem is what? Aside from that, it just muddles all the issues.
That's the problem. That the job in halacha the Jewish system as opposed to maybe the secular system is it's really the job of the judges to grill everyone and figure out what's going on. So you just have the people there. They're supposed to tell you the facts. They're not supposed to. They don't even have to know the law at all. So the litigants don't have to know the law at all. So the point of the Beis Din is to grill them, determine all the facts of the case, and render a ruling. Now they have people coming in who know the system much better, and they, you know, say, oh, but this POSIX is this, and if you read it this way so it goes in favor of my client, then it just, you know, it's like... Right, so... Yeah, it's a problem. They should do away with the Toein Rabbani. But people feel like, because they're used to the idea of a lawyer from secular... legal proceedings,
counsel,
that they feel like they want someone who knows the law to advocate for them. But if you level the playing field and you have both people, not have a Toein Rabbani, so that's the best way to go.
You think it enough that you have at least one of the Dayanim in your pocket. You know, that's
But the Dayanim can do, even though the Dayanim are not normally supposed to put stuff in the mouth of the litigants, they are allowed to under certain circumstances. And it takes a lot of care to determine what type of circumstance it is, that if they see that the person, one of the litigants, is on the right path to making a correct claim in the Beis Din, even though they don't know all the halacha in order to formulate it correctly, they are allowed to help him along a little bit in formulating the claim. But in general, if there's somebody who's not even on the right track at all, the Beis Din is not supposed to act as a lawyer. That's what it says in Pirkei Avos. No, you're not supposed to make... You're not supposed to act like a lawyer when you adjudicate a case. Okay, so the Beis Din has the right and is encouraged to consult with greater people when rendering their verdict, although they should do it anonymously, etc., so the person shouldn't be, and obviously the person can't have spoken to and have been influenced already by litigants. The Amru Baz Haris in Yenzeh, Pirkei Avos says, Kol Moneh Atzo Min Hadin, Moneh Abimenu Eva V'Gezel Ushua Shav. That if you decline to serve as a dayan, then you prevented yourself, or you've removed from yourself, ill will and theft and improper oaths. Oh. So basically, the Chazal are trying to encourage people not to serve as Dayanim, if at all possible. But, Becholze, Lamdeinu, that, but that's only when you're talking about somebody who's, there are other people who are as or more qualified, that you should try to avoid serving as a Dayan. But if they, you know that you're the correct person for this case, and you don't serve on the Bezdin, that's also not spoken of well in Chazal. So you have to be very careful when conducting these proceedings in order that one should not make an error in judgment. There are many different ways to go and to interpret monetary law. In order to serve as a dayan, one needs to be an even greater scholar, perhaps, and to issue rulings in regular ritual areas of halacha. The Gemara says in Bava Basra that somebody who wants to hone his or her skills in learning Torah and to become acquire great wisdom should study civil law. That's the largest area of study in the Torah. Just look at Maseches Nezikin. Maseches Nezikin was the first tractate in Seder Nezikin, but now we've split it into three parts because, not we, for a very long time, it's been split into three parts, Bava Kama, Bava Metzia, Bava Basra, because it's a huge, gigantic, you know, so much, and not to mention also Sanhedrin, there's also so much other stuff. If you look at the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam, so a very large percentage of the Sfarim are talking about monetary law, and about oaths that take place in monetary law, that it really is the, you know, one of the largest areas of the Torah. Shehin kemayan hanovea, that it's like a flowing spring. And that's why also that the classical curriculum of yeshiva study is really in Seder Nezikin. Mm-hmm. You're going to ask yourself, so why are these 15-year-old kids, they're studying Bava Basra. Why do they need to be studying Bava Basra? They should better be studying Brachos, Shabbos. They should be learning how to observe Halacha, how to be proper Jews. The answer is because the point is not necessarily to learn the source information per se, but rather, oh, that's also important if they ever want to, but it's the method. That it's real.
It's also Halacha, Bava Basra.
Right, but it's less applicable to the lives of 15-year-olds than other parts of the Torah.
It's about acquiring the skills.
Right, because this is where you really can apply the skills. There's so many different possibilities and applications to different legal cases. But I don't know if this is what it's talking about. Nowadays, people are learning the, Reb Chaim's. People are learning the Ketos HaChoshen. They're not learning the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch and the Sma and all the classic Halakha Sfarim. But whatever, the point is to learn the methodology because it really is good in honing your brain.
But also, isn't it sort of the yeshiva, masechtas? I mean, the ones that where the Gemara itself is especially good for learning the how to learn Gemara.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Outside subject matter.
Right. So, and even learning in the halacha, choshe mishpa, there's so many details and so many nowadays. In order really to be a dayan, you need to specialize in that. Somebody was telling me at the Bezdin the other day. Not the other day, a couple weeks ago, he says he was an Israeli, so he said Choshen Mishpat Zayam. Choshen Mishpat is a sea, literally. There's so much there, so many. Right.
Choshen
Ocean. Ha ha ha. Okay. But there's so many different interpretations and ways to view things in the light of civil cases that are brought in front of you. He said that it's nowadays, it's you really have to specialize in that. You have people like Rav Elyashiv. Who are recognized as authorities, they were huge dayanim also, and they're also recognized as authorities in regular ritual laws of Judaism as well. But that's getting rarer, because really, for contemporary people, it's, remember, nowadays we live in a generation of specialization, so it's much harder to do that. Normally, nowadays, people either specialize in the ritual parts or in the Choshen Mishpat type. That's not to say that if you want to try, and everybody here is encouraged to, master everything. That's completely fine. The Zirunu Gamikain, So Chazal tells us also Shechaviv Aleinu Din Shel Pruta Kedin Shel Me'amane Laduno Solamito. So the Dayanim shouldn't say if there's a small case that comes before them, they shouldn't say, "Oh, this isn't that important because I only want the $1 million cases. Those are the only ones that are interesting for me." If somebody comes and he sues someone for $5, they should treat it with the same amount of seriousness as if they're sort of suing for $500,000. Omipnei chomer hadin, and because of the very serious nature of coming to halachic civil rulings, shibchu harbe mishayocho lahatil pshara bein bale hariv. That, like we were saying before, that the Chazal, there are different opinions in the Gemara about it. The normative opinion is that it's preferable to have a pshara, to make a compromise between the litigants, as opposed to insisting on strict halacha. V'olav Nemar, it says in this, emesu mishpat shalom shiftu, that judge truth and justice and peace. So shizeo mishpat shel shalom. So what do you mean? What's a justice of peace? Either it's justice or it's peace. Normally, justice is not necessarily foster peace because somebody wins, one person wins, one person loses.
But you know that classic street chant: no justice, no peace.
Okay.
Think about it.
You have to have justice in a peaceful society, but in the microcosm, then it doesn't necessarily
but
cause
to have
peace.
A peace. Ultimately, it's right. the case is being made that, and ultimately, to have a peaceful society, it has to be based on justice.
Yeah, okay, yeah, I hear that, but that's not the point I'm trying to get across now. Yeah, the Chen v'David who Omer, and Sefer Shmuel it says v'David osa mishpat utzaka l'chol amo that David Hamelech did justice and righteousness for all his people. Ezo mishpat sheishi motzaka. What is justice that there is righteousness? Also, Havi Omer is a bitsua. Bitsua means pshara. So say it's a synonym. So this is again this is what's preferable, and this is the procedure that's normally conducted by Bati Din nowadays. Rabbi Willig told the story that years ago in yeshiva there was somebody who took one of his svarim to someone else to reinforce the binding. Mm-hmm. So he did the reinforcing of the binding, and he gave it back, and he said, "Okay, I like it's time to pay me. I charge $5." Apparently, this has maybe been the 80s. I don't know. So $5 was a lot more than it was now. So the person said, "That's absurd. Why should I pay you $5? That's way too much to other people who charge less for this this same service." So the binder took the customer to in front of Rabbi. They made a bezdin of Rabbi Willig, Rabbi Schechter, I think Rabbi Neuberger, one of the other, for this $5 case. So again, they had to be as careful in it as a $5 case is in something much bigger. That's what we just learned. Mm-hmm. And the person who brought the lawsuit, the binder, said, "I'm not interested in pshara. I want din. I want the halacha," so they had no choice. So, I mean, if the dayanim are really nervous that they don't know the din properly, so they wouldn't take such a case. They'd say, "No, we only do pshara, we don't do din." But these three big rabbanim, they were a little nervous, but they said, "Okay, it's a case of $5, and we have to take care in it. But lemaisa, it's not a case of $500,000, it's a case of $5. So we're willing to take the chance, and we'll do din." So they pass it in favor of the binder. That he had to pay him the whole $5. Maybe in a pshara they would try to work it out. There was a misunderstanding.
Wait a second.
No, there was a misunderstanding here. What's the normal charge? What's the normal price of binding? And maybe you can go a little less. And they would have tried to make some sort of peace. That would have been pshara. But the binder said he didn't want pshara. He wanted din. So they had no choice but to make the full award to the in favor of the binder.
How can a litigant dictate to the base din what kind of a...
The assumption is halacha is din. You had, in order to do a pshara, you have to get the two litigants to agree to it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that didn't happen to me.
If you go to the Beis Din of America, for example, so they say our standard procedure is pshara. That's what we do. So if you're coming to judge in front of us, so you accept the you accept.
Exactly what.
So that's that. Then if you go in front of that Beis Din, so you that's by default you accept pshara. But here he made his own Beis Din of these two rabbanim. He said, "No, I want din."
So,
I'm sure.
In this example, what would be pshara?
No, if they come to the judge, if the guy sued him for $5 and the judges just said, "Oh, you're just suing him for $5, but we don't want to award the full amount because we're doing a pshara, so therefore pay him $2.50. That's not a pshara. That's a random splitting the amount in the middle. They have to determine is the proper amount. the, in this case, would it be 3.5? Would it be 4? Would it be... That's the pshara.
Okay.
V'yesa rube ha'azharos she'zhirunu chazichonam levracha ba'ashvayas hadin. And all the rest of the things that our sages told us that we have to be very careful about to make the din proper. Ushar prati ha'mitzvah and all the rest of the details of the mitzvah. Heim befizor beseder nezikin. We'll also talk about the next two mitzvahs. They're found in the seder nezikin. Ve'ikar b'maseches Sanhedrin, mostly maseches Sanhedrin, which discusses judicial procedures more than the other masechtos, which discuss the facts, you know, how to adjudicate the case once it comes in front of you. This applies only to males. Why? Because they are the ones who serve as judges. And the Menchas Chinuch points out that this is not entirely accurate. That there is a standard Bezdin, in fact, does consist of men, there is a possibility that if there is known to be a woman who is very wise and very knowledgeable about Jewish civil law, and it's possible for the litigants to go in front of her and say, you know, we recognize that you're not an officially sanctioned Bezdin, but we like you to adjudicate this anyway, and we accept your verdict. So it's sort of like a Jewish version of binding arbitration. So in such a case, a woman could adjudicate a case, and then, obviously, the Menchas Chinuch says, push it, that she would also be bound by this mitzvah. You say, oh, I'm a woman, I'm not a real dayan, so I'm just going to decide the case however I feel like. That's obviously wrong. And a woman who's called upon and accepted by litigants in order to be a judge, then that's okay, she has to be very careful.
In other words, if two people have a dispute and they don't feel like going to a full base, they don't want the expense or the trouble, they can go ahead and say, we want binding arbitration. Is that, then say they say they go to, then you can go to then say to like anyone, someone's like an individual, you know.
Yeah, if you choose someone, if you say, you go to your communal rabbi and the rabbi says, you know, I'm more of the ritual laws part of Judaism expert, so, you know, I don't really know Choshev Mishpat that well, and they say, we don't care anyway, just decide our case, so that's okay.
Yeah. And his decision then is binding as what we're based in.
Correct. We'll see that in more details about that in a second. But basically, if they say we accept on ourselves whatever you say, even if it's not in consonance with the recorded halacha, then that is that's binding arbitration. Yeah, he shofta as Yisrael.
Yeah. So why does a special exception have to be made for a woman?
Either they were makabel her, or there was a special horasha. Those are the answers that are given.
This means that there's no appeals process.
Excellent. So this was actually a very big problem about 100 years ago when the British government was deciding that they were setting up in the official recognized Rabbanut, the chief rabbinate of the land of Israel, of Palestine as it was called then. And they said, you know, we're not going to interfere with the judicial processes. The Jews can decide their cases for themselves, but we're applying certain conditions, that it has to be somewhat in accordance with the accepted British legal system. And one of the requirements was that there has to be an appeals court. Because in secular law, the possibility of appeal is a very big part of the process of the judicial process. So Rav Kook, who was either about to be or was already the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael at the time, so interestingly, he wrote, so there was a big discussion at the time as to whether there could be an appeals court in halacha, because we know that there is a halachic principle that says a bezdin is not supposed to review the proceedings of another bezdin. There really is no recorded appeals process in halacha besides for the bezdin hagodol. When the bezdin hagodol of 71 people met, when there was real smicha and everything, so they were considered the foremost authority, and then in theory they could overturn rulings of the other courts, but. Right, but in standard normative non-Sanhedrin Judaism times, there's no such thing as a bezdin. Every bezdin operates independently. If the ruling becomes public and then it becomes very clear that there was a mistake made or something like that, so they can reconsider, and we'll discuss in a minute, there are situations where the din can be changed. But there's no official appeals process per se in appeals court in halacha at all now. So there was a whole discussion amongst the Rabbanim what they were going to do. So Rav Kook actually wrote, he says, there's no room in halacha for an appeals court. then he presided on. I mean, he had no choice. He was forced by the British government that they had to establish what they call the Beit Din HaGadol Irurim, the Great Rabbinical Court for Appeals.
Mm-hmm.
So they had no choice. So the way that it worked, that they said, well, if A, you know, there were certain opinions. I mean, a lot of different approaches to it. But if there's one Beis Din that's recognized as being so much greater than the others, so even nowadays they can review the opinion, the procedures of another Beis Din. And the other way that they interpreted it was, even to make it in accordance with halacha, is that basically if you establish this as the system, if there's a communal ordinance that there's going to be a higher Beis Din, so then it's okay because a lower court always then renders its decision with the knowledge. With the knowledge in its head this is only on condition that the, that
actually,
this
uh-huh.
Beis Din agrees with.
Well,
so
once they managed to throw out the British, you'll excuse me.
Yeah, the system was in place.
Couldn't they then go back to the original halachic way and without this dre to keep the British happy?
There are a lot of things in the state of Israel that are holdovers from the days of the British.
And there are some people in Israel who are not so orthodox that they would insist on, you know.
Right, so that's it still functions. The Beit Din HaGadol Irurim. There were some very chashuv, one of the greatest rabbis in the 20th century served on the Beit Din HaGadol Irurim.
So did they get a lot of business?
Yeah.
They did get a lot of business.
They could always do is they could always say, okay, to keep the British happy, we'll say we have this appeals process, but in practice, always uphold the lower
right. Yeah, but then the Dayanim who are appointed to the higher court aren't going to want to do that. They might really think that the lower court made mistakes sometimes. So why would they do that? Yeah. In the olden days, you remember that if the official Beis Din of the city, besides ad hoc Beis Din, which could be three regular people, fine, but the official Beis Din of each city, of the Kehillah, was the greatest scholar. I mean, they were they were huge, so they're not going to. You know.
Well, what about if it is definitely found that not simply that someone had a dubious ruling in terms of halacha, but they're outright, say, corrupt, chas v'shalom?
Yeah,
you
have to redo it, yeah.
I mean, all right, but there is a mechanism for, for overturning a manifestly corrupt, psak of a Beis Din?
Yeah. Ve'over aleha v'asa avel b'mishpat. Oh, so a woman Beis Din, so that only works, by the way, lest you tell me, that's the problem, let's just have everyone except women dayanim for everything, but it only works when it's a civil case and it's subject to the litigant's desires. Uh-huh. But if you have a situation where you need an objective Torah-sanctioned Beis Din, like to accept converts or to, do Hataras Nedarim or something, and you have, when you need a real dayan, so then a woman would not work for that.
A real dayan?
If you violate this and you did a perversion of justice, if you conducted your procedures not in accordance with Torah law, ladas, on purpose, you make a mistake, so you're not over on ivos hamishpat. You shouldn't do it. You should be careful about not doing it, but it's not perversion of justice per se. You violate his negative commandment. You don't receive the penalty of lashes. So if it's just, this is just talking about speech. You say, and normally the dayan just says, okay, you win, you lose. So therefore there's no action over here. So there's no malchus. Except the ones we just talked about, swearing, tmura, etc. There's another reason. You could say, even if the dayan actually took the property from one person and transferred it to another person, and maybe there's a mice in there, so that's not even going to be the case. Because if you conduct a procedure which is not in accordance with the Torah, so then your din, your procedure, your court case is dismissed and it must be redone. So basically, if you have what's called a toa bidvar mishnah, that if you adjudicate in a manner that is an obvious error, we'll discuss exactly what that means in a second, then it just returns. All the money has to go back to the opposite party. The Inyan Lomar Shikola Toa Ladun Bimashu Hefech Kavanas HaTorah, if you judge in accordance with the opposite of Torah rule, Belisafik Dino Bata Lagamri, the court case is as if it never took place, the Rehu Kilo Lo Nemar, just as if it was never. Vesham Yisbayar Sheish Tzadim Shim Don Hadayin Behefech HaMS, Shadino din. There are certain times when if a judge judges in, not in accordance with the Torah, that Shadino din v'chayev l'shalami beis l'mish iveis l'dino. So in such a situation, sometimes the verdict is upheld. If you make a mistake in certain situations, we'll discuss exactly what in a minute, then the court case, the verdict stands, but the judge has to pay the person who suffered monetarily from his incorrect ruling. You still don't have malchus. Like I said, if you literally took the stuff from one person and gave it to the other one, because it could be reimbursed, so therefore you don't receive the penalty of malchus.
That seems a little strange to say that, you know, there's no maisa because the judge simply verbally came down with, like...
Why? That's what it is. Maisa means there has to be action. All verbal
things.
Action means,
in other words, somebody has to pick something up and do something.
There are lots of verbal things which you might think are a maisa, but are not. V'im lo she'yarach ha'inyan v'netzi migeder malachteinu. I really want to tell you about this halacha in very great detail, but I'm not going to be in do it in as much detail because, you know, my sefer ha'chinuch is supposed to be concise. I would explain to you every single detail about when the judgment goes back and when it doesn't. I have to tell you, this is one, he said that Choshe Mishpat is the most complicated area of halacha. This is one of the most complicated areas in Choshe Mishpat. There's so many different opinions about every single little, you can formulate the halacha as like a few sentences, but about every word in the sentence, there are differences of opinion about. It's really, if you look in Choshe Mishpat Simen Chaf Hei 25, so you see there is more commentary than text in there because it's just like, literally, the difference is opinion about just about every single detail. Bad stud in more than one opinion. Bad stud sometimes. Bad stud in She'eno Choser V'chayev HaBezdin L'Shalami Beis, and sometimes where the judgment is not reversed, but rather the verdict stands and the Bezdin has to pay. Bad stud in She'eno Choser Patar Bezdin L'Shalami. There are certain times where the verdict, even though it may not be the best verdict, stands and the Bezdin does not have to pay. Uchlal de Milsa Lefianira. This is the Sefer Achinuch summary, but like I said, we're not going to go into all the details, but there are many different opinions about all the details. The Chol Hecha Shedanu below Kabbalah, that if they judged without the explicit acceptance of their authority by the litigants, V'ika Ba'ir Godol Mehem V'Toa Afilu B'Shikol Adas Dinam Choser. And there's somebody in the city who was greater than them, so they really didn't have a right to force these people to judge in front of them. So even if they made a mistake with Shikul Hadas, with weighing of the various opinions, so their judgment is reversed. So what's Shikul Hadas? What's the difference between Toa B'Shikul Hadas and a Toa B'Dvar Mishnah? So Toa B'Shikul Hadas means... Again, different opinions about exactly what it means, but more or less, Toas Bidvar Mishnah, rather. Toas Bidvar Mishnah means that there you made a mistake regarding an explicit rule that's recorded either in the Mishnah, literally, or the explicit conclusion of the Talmudic discussion is in accordance with a certain opinion, and you just didn't know, and you ruled in the opposite, because you thought that made more sense at the time, or something like that. So that's called a Toas Bidvar Mishnah. And that's the one that's more likely to just be reversed as opposed to the verdict be a standing. And Toz B'Shikul Adas means when the conclusion, that literally means a mistake regarding the weighing of different opinions, or in terms of the, what's the word, English word I'm looking for? Shikul Adas means, but anyway, it means that if there is something in the Talmud, there are different opinions mentioned in the Talmud, and you... think there's no clear conclusion, so you pick. No, it's not really correct. So you think that you should apply one of the opinions, but really you didn't know that the normal practice of Dayanim, or according to some opinions, or that the normal assumption of the poskim, whatever, is in accordance with the other opinion, then that is Talos V'Shikul Adas. So that's more likely for the verdict to stand, and you have to pay. Yourself, the judge has to pay himself, and there's a whole discussion amongst the poskim as to what constitutes exactly a tos bidvar mishnah. So, if something is, does it literally have to be recorded in the Talmud in order for it to be a tos bidvar mishnah, or if, say nowadays if it's recorded in the Shulchan Aruch as the basic halacha and you rule otherwise, is that considered tos bidvar mishnah? And this addresses actually Mrs. Hirsch's question, because one of the discussions in there is, so for this is the discussion in the times of the Rishonim. So the Rishonim generally looked for the Gaonim for guidance of how to interpret the Talmud. The Gaonim were the leaders of the yeshivas in Bavel, Babylonia, who were, you know, in the same place where the Talmud was composed and redacted, and they presumably had a better insight as to what the Talmud meant than the Rishonim, who were, you know, trying their best, but they lamaisa, they were living in Europe, which was, you know, a little bit far removed. You know, there's a direct train of tradition, of course, and nevertheless, you know, certain things get lost in translation. So the question is, if there was a Bezdin in the times of the Rishonim that ruled a certain way, and then they were presented with information that the Geonim had said the opposite, so is that considered a Tos B'Dvar Mishnah or a Tos B'Shikul Adas? So it says, well, sometimes it could be neither. Because if the Bezdin says, oi, you just showed me this letter from the Geonim that says the opposite of what we ruled, oy vey, if we had known that the Geonim said this way, of course there's no way we would have ruled in the way that we ruled. But if the Bezdin says, you know, we're also great scholars, and even though we generally defer to the Geonim in this case, I really think they made a mistake. I think that, you know, the understanding of the Talmud cannot be in accordance with what the Geonim say, so therefore, they have a right to rule that way. That's not a Tos B'Shikul Das or a Tos B'Dvar Mishnah. Again, the Rishonim say that if you're not on that level, and you say, well, I disagree, so then maybe that is a Tos. But if you're really, you are a great scholar, then you have a right. It's normally assumed to be in limited doses, but to disagree with the earlier authorities. So
who decides?
It's fuzzy, I'm not going to lie. You have the Rishonim that have these discussions, and they have certain assumptions, but it is very fuzzy as to where the line is drawn, where you cannot disagree with the previous authorities. I mean, there's a convention that people say, you know, have written the article, Shirim and said Shirim on this, about how, I mean, the assumption all over the Gemara is that the Amoraim, the sages of the Talmud, do not disagree with the Tanoim. Well, what do you mean by that?
I mean, if they make a determination which is different than the Rishonim or than the Gaonim, for that matter, do we follow them or do we follow the Gaonim?
It depends normally what the consensus of the later poskim is.
After whom?
Closest to our generation.
Closest, because it does say the judge of your time.
Right, exactly, the judge of your time. We have
even
to go.
If it's, you know, the
right.
I mean, there's change. That's a fact. There is change, and in the end, it's
that's
what everybody
why it's
does.
The judge of your time.
Do it or not.
Yeah, but that, it's within. This is a huge philosophical question in terms of you know when what people do really seems to have no way of possibly fitting into the Talmud. So there have the great postgame throughout the generation. There have been times where I simply said. You know, probably something got lost in translation somewhere, so we're going to change the practice and we're going to do something else.
I haven't said, and I may be wrong.
It's not always so clear. At certain situations, so a rabbi who's on the level may decide that somebody, if he thinks a minority opinion makes more sense, even though it didn't make into the, you know, some of the classical halakhic literature, so he will give, and somebody has an emergency situation, so he will say you could rely on that. Others say, no, once you, that certain opinion has been so rejected that there's not even room to rely on that in an emergency situation. It's very, you have to have a feel for it. It's not, it's very
difficult. Let's get back a little bit, though. Are there areas in halakha, places, or various things in halakha right now, where the normative psak goes with the gra against the Rishonim, you know, and one of these cases, you know.
Well, so you have something, for example, like the Zmanim. Mm-hmm. So the most people beforehand assume that it's Machlokas Rishonim is the truth. So the Gro, you know, went like one of them. It wasn't the Gro coming up with his own thing. Now, whether the hours of the day are calculated from sunrise to sunset or whether it's from dawn to dusk. So certain things we also accept, like the Gra, that nowadays, in the olden days, used to wear weekday clothes on the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av. We don't really do that anymore.
Really?
Nowadays we wear Shabbos clothes because the Gra felt that was wrong. That is a, you know, everything is suspended on Shabbos in honor of, everything of Tisha B'Av is suspended in honor of Shabbos.
And Tisha B'Av itself is suspended on,
right, exactly.
Well,
Shabbos.
So how
do we, but wait, was the only one who said that? I mean, we can pinpoint this to one person one time?
Well, I think Sfardim did wear Shabbos clothes on Shabbos, and Shabbos Chazon, but the Ashkenazi minhag was to wear weekday clothes, and then it would change based on the ground.
Was it always that minhag? The Ashkenazi minhag?
always. I mean, I can't tell you. I mean
500 years.
Yeah,
or something?
Yeah, approximately. V'hu shelo nasu v'nasnu bayad. That's in a situation where the judges made a mistake b'shikol adas, but they didn't take it and give it to someone else, you know, with their actual hands. Shelo nasu v'nasnu bayad ein dinam choser al v'chayavim l'shana. Then they have to pay. Then the verdict stands, and they have to pay from their own pockets. The litigant whom they caused the financial loss for. But in a different way, so for example, when there's no one greater in the city and they made a mistake, so the din is not chozer at all. If they had full authority to judge, that we shouldn't necessarily penalize them by making them pay. So they don't pay. And then if there was a situation where they were really not supposed to be judging this case and they decided to do it anyway, then there's more of a case to punish them. In other words, that's part of the principle called Dina de Garmi, that we sometimes when you cause damage to another person, even if it's not direct, then we make you reimburse that person. Also, you should know that if, let's say, there were three judges and two of the judges came up with a wrong verdict and one of the judges really had the right verdict, even though he was outvoted, so he doesn't have to pay. Then you divide the monetary loss and you split it just between those two. Or in a situation where, but that doesn't apply in a situation, well, let's say there were five people on the Beis Din and three people voted the wrong way and two people voted the right way, so they could have stood as a Beis Din on their own, the three people. Right, so they have to cover the whole loss as opposed to the other way where they would just divide the loss into three and they would only have to reimburse two-thirds. One-third the guy would just lose. Sorry. But again, different opinions about if Shikla Das, if to pay, if there's somebody greater, if it be Rishus, not Rishus, whatever it is. Again, different opinions about every single thing that the Sefer Kenach just said. The Chol Hecha Damrinan Dinam Choser. In any situation where we say that the din goes back, Afilu Nevad Onechal Hadavar Shadanu Alav Peturin Milashalim. So let's say you had a situation where you had a Toz Bidvar Mishnah, so normally you just undo the verdict. So let's say the money isn't around anymore to be able to give it back to the rightful owner. So then the judges still don't have to pay because it's the halacha is din choser and they don't have to pay. Elim kein nasu v'nasnu b'yada mamish, if they actually took it and gave it to that person, t'cheivan shekein midin mazikin miyas chayav in l'shalom, they have to pay in order to make restitution because they caused damage to another. Halav hachi p'turin, but in that they didn't actually do the damage, then they don't have to pay. Because there's no dina de garmi here because they didn't have any intention to. Normally, they say choser. This also applies, by the way, to the Rishonim apply this to if the rabbi makes a mistake in ritual things because, let's say, you rule that a certain animal is treif and it's really kosher, so when does the rabbi have to pay? Not have to pay. Again, a whole discussion, the same differences of opinion. And if you make a mistake in a stated plain halacha, perush lanu mori yishmeru el. My teacher said, "Lav davka mishnah mamish." Doesn't mean it has to be stated in a mishnah. Ela af kol shu meforish b'talmud b'divrei amoraim shu halacha b'toa ba'adayin gamze toa b'dvar mishnah yikari. I presented it before because that's a normal assumption that it's not just something stated in the mishnah, but even if it's a basic halacha that's accepted, then that counts as toas b'dvar mishnah. Vod he frizu al midosam lomar. Oh, the Sefer Chinuch does not agree with this extension that I said some people say. Shafilu atoa b'dvar acher echad shepasak echad min hagona min hachama for some b'neinu b'chachma ketoa b'dvar mishnah mishavina leiv. There's an accepted halachic ruling from a very great halachic scholar. It's accepted in the generation, then it's also considered toas b'dvar mishnah. Elam ken yomar osu bezden shal visha yodea v'niskar das osu agon. So the Beis Din is appropriate, and they can say, well, I disagree with that based on the ruling that's accepted by everyone, then that would not be a Toz B'Dvar Mishnah. But if they said, you know, that's, I agree, you know, if I had known that, I would have ruled otherwise, and that would be considered to be a Toz B'Dvar Mishnah, even though it's not explicitly stated in the very classic halachic sources. That's the Sefer Chinuch presentation, but don't go making any practical halachic determinations based on this, because there are lots of opinions.